All right, we're back, and we're back here with Representative Joe Havemann. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Juke.
And, Joe, I haven't been to Detroit for a while, but that's changed, I think, from the pictures I've seen.
Well, it depends on the last time you've been there. We all know the story of Detroit and what's happened over the past decades, and it's come to a head with the bankruptcy announcement by the governor, and I see renewed optimism about Detroit. I think it was long overdue, and the governor and his emergency manager, Kevin Orr, did everything they could to avoid the bankruptcy. They did not get the cooperation that they needed to get the debt restructured, and they announced a couple weeks ago that Detroit would be filing Chapter 9 bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. Now we wait and watch.
Yeah.
Because naturally there's lawsuits being pursued to stop the bankruptcy for those that have are creditors of the city. But the city really has about over $18 billion worth of debt. It collects about $2.5 billion a year in tax revenue, and it physically cannot do it. The governor has said that what he hopes is that if we can somehow eliminate some of this debt, and it is the biggest bankruptcy for a municipality in the country's history, but if we can get rid of some of this debt, restructure things, and eliminate some of that debt, he wants to see the resources put into services for the community.
Mm-hmm.
It is there's portions of the city that are so underserved from police and fire and just municipal services that you and I take so for granted living in a community that's healthy and happy and works well. 40% of the streetlights that work, I'm mad if mine goes out in front of my house.
Yeah.
and I'm on the phone to somebody. So we can't comprehend the kind of problems they have in Detroit when we're from West Michigan. But I think this is a good first step. And
mm-hmm.
I just applaud the governor for his courage in taking this on. And it's going to take years, decades to get back
right
in the black and moving forward. But his immediate goal is to provide better services for the citizens of Detroit.
And it will take some investment in Detroit, too.
Oh, absolutely. It's going to take investment. It's going to, and, I probably won't be there when we start to see that investment, but people are so afraid of what they call the bailout of either
yeah.
the federal government or the state government coming in and throwing good money after bad. That's not what we mean by investment. What we hope to see is that through the private sector, if there's confidence in the way Detroit is going to operate, and there's good things happening in Detroit right now with all the negative comments, but if we see private investment coupled with normal public investment, revenue sharing, and things like that targeted toward those areas that Detroit needs, just like Holland and other communities get revenue sharing, Detroit should get that too. And if we can see that kind of investment, plus the private sector go in and rebuild that city and
mm-hmm.
rebuild those neighborhoods. Detroit is our largest city, and in so many respects, their reputation carries over on how people feel about all of Michigan.
Yeah.
So it's important that we do look at a plan that rebuilds that city.
Mm-hmm. All right. 395-1450. If you have a question for the representative here this morning, feel free to call us, 395-1450. Our line is open for you. And what's going on? There's nothing much going on in Lansing right now except committee hearings, that sort of thing?
Well, yes, we are out of session officially for the summer. That doesn't mean that we're not going to work every day.
Right.
Or most days. I'll be there in Lansing Wednesday of this week, and I make sure I get there every Wednesday. Past couple of weeks, it's been Tuesday and Wednesday. But there's a number of work groups that are going on that, people should be aware of. The most, probably the most newsworthy one has been the Medicaid Healthy Michigan
yes.
workforce that the Senate's been working on. But there's also the Common Core, which I believe Amanda Price is
right.
working on. That work group to bring back a recommendation to the Education Committee and ultimately to the House. There's a work group that comes out of the appropriations side called the School Bond Loan Fund, which we're revisiting that School Bond Loan Fund. There's been a few bad actors in the state and that have misused that, and we've got to figure out how to put controls on it. And at the same time, for schools like specifically Hudsonville's been the most vocal in our area talking about the need for it. to make sure that they have the opportunity to be able to borrow money for their expansion.
Right.
That's a growing community and right here in our district and right here in West Michigan. They have had to add schools because of their pupils, because of the increased pupil population. So that one's going on, and then I'm part of a work group, Juvenile Life Without Parole Sentences. The Supreme Court ruled last June, a year ago June, that you could not have a blanket policy anymore that said that all juveniles would receive life without parole for first-degree murder. You had to show discretion. You had to differentiate between people that could be rehabilitated maybe in 20, 30 years,
mm-hmm.
and those that, frankly, the crimes were so heinous that they deserve life without parole. So we're working through that with prosecutors and the Attorney General's office and trying to come to a compromise as to what juvenile life means if somebody commits a crime at 14, 15, 16, or 17 years old. And that's a really tough one. We have a hearing coming in late August, which we know we're going to have victims' families arriving to and talking about what happened to their families. And these are terrible stories about heinous crimes that have taken place. But we have to, the Supreme Court has said, we have to realize that we're also dealing with people because of their age, don't have the capacity to fully understand the consequences of their actions.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the things that are going on in Lansing, and it's still a busy time, and I make myself available on days like this to be in the district, and if anybody has a specific need, as well as calling the office and talking to Connie or Patty or Mark, they can call me direct, and I'd be happy to sit down and talk to people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're talking with Representative Joe Haveman this morning, and I was just talking to Joe about the beach situation as we had a discussion on last week here about the Holland State Park. And, Joe, it seems there's something like not enough trash barrels. That was one of the things. And the people would go on the beach and there'd be junk laying on the beach like dirty diapers, that sort of thing. I don't know. What's your take on that?
Well, I see the light going off, so that spurred the call.
Good morning. You're on the line with Joe.
Hey, good morning. This really isn't for Joe, but yes, it is in a way. I read the editorials yesterday in the Holland Sentinel. Joe Bird from Park Township blasted Republicans, Governor Snyder for the what's going on in Detroit. If you haven't read it, read it. She blasted Snyder and the Republican Party. Of course, it's all the Republican Party. But on the same page, then read Charles Crosshammer, Crosshammer. He did a editorial, and you know, it's just such corruption that has gone on for the last 50 years in Detroit. From unions, from Democrats, from crooked Democrats, and you know, then you read Joe Bird's, and what a joke! She just needs to keep her mouth shut. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I guess I wasn't aimed at you, Joe, but
I read her editorials too when they come in the paper, and I know the tone of them when I see her name at the bottom, and she has a very strong opinions toward the Republican Party, and I've met Joe. I've talked with her. I've met with her, but boy, it's all one sided when you discuss these kind of issues with her. And if you'd ask her, it is all our fault as a Republican mm-hmm. Party. Clearly, there's not a more partisan person around. But that being said, certainly there's blame to go around for problems, but in Detroit's case, it has been run by one party and the unions for 50, 60 years, and I think people have finally woken up and realized that it's time to change. So I did receive a nice letter. I'm meeting with some people in Detroit, and one of the things I'm working on, there's a group in Detroit that want to start a project that would take 1 and 2 year sentences for criminals, and these are first-time criminals that would normally go to prison for no more than 2 years. They want to take them into Detroit and open a combination small prison jail setting and an educational setting, and do 2 years of intensive education to try and take these kids that did not receive a good education in the Detroit public school system, are on their way to a life of crime and have already committed crimes, and instead of going into a traditional jail, bring them into a new setting and try to educate them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was naturally funding is part of it, and they're looking for ways that they can do some of that locally and some of it through the state, but at a cheaper cost than what our corrections department runs. So you would provide better service, we hope, at a less cost and get these people back into the public, into the workforce, and hopefully a productive life. But this gentleman that I'm dealing with sent me a thank you letter on Friday, and it was just so nice to hear him talk about the renewed attitude of Detroit residents. And he makes the claim that many are, he calls them blue dog Detroit Democrats that have expressed to him that they voted for Snyder and they intend to again because Snyder had the intestinal fortitude to take the bull by the horns and try to fix problems. And that's something we haven't seen in decades out of Detroit.
Right.
And, I was very inspired by his comments that, we're getting beyond race in Detroit. And he talks about the need, the positive of electing Barack Obama as our first African-American president, and the prospects of voting for Dugan as the next mayor, who would be the first white mayor in Detroit since, I believe, 61. And he says, we're getting beyond race in politics, and we are truly starting to look at people's character and their ability,
mm-hmm.
and not just the color of their skin. And although I didn't vote for Barack Obama, I think that is the one positive of having him in the White House, is hopefully we are starting to get beyond race.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think Jerry Kavanaugh was the last
last
one.
And I'm currently in the, I don't know if it's his, I believe it was his father. Yeah, I serve with his son in the legislature now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that Kavanaugh is quite a name in, on the east side, political name.
Well, I was a host for a day when we had Mayor's Exchange in Saugatuck Detroit, and I was a host for Kavanaugh here in Saugatuck.
Saugatuck and Detroit did Mayor's Exchange.
Yes.
Wow, two cities that don't have a whole lot in
common. That's right. But, you know, they do really. Sometimes I say it's only add more zeros, on the budget.
That's interesting.
All right. 395-1450 here, Talk the Town. We were talking about the, who can people get in touch with if they have a problem with the beach?
Well, I don't have a phone number right here, but certainly the Department of Natural Resources oversees the beach, and I've just been on the phone with them about the Grand Haven Beach because I know a lot of people that camp in Grand Haven. They've expressed concerns to me about conditions of the bathrooms, and as we were talking, things left on the beach itself.
Yeah.
So I have been talking to them, and at least in Grand Haven, he assures me that improvements are coming. Now, if you want to call my office, if our listeners want to call my office, we can get you a number and a contact for the DNR and start making a list of those complaints. My phone number in Lansing, the toll-free number is 866-908-4347. And either Mark or Jonathan will be answering the phone today and will direct you in the right direction.
Okay.
But, it's interesting because I had one letter come to my office regarding the beaches, and this is from a friend in Zeeland who camps all summer. He's retired, and I believe, and camps an awful lot. And he said Holland was actually doing well. It was Grand Haven that he had the problem with.
Mm.
I guess I'm bothered a little bit to find out that Holland has problems too.
Well, I sometimes wonder because we have two gatehouses, but the other one is never used. The second one is never used.
Yes.
And maybe there isn't personnel to man the second one. I don't know.
Well, and when we did the license plate sticker method of paying for the campground, I was told, I was under the impression that we were going to start doing away with the gatehouses, and there would be kind of a sampling enforcement for people that were in the beach. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe because Grand Haven and Holland are the most popular beaches, and they do fill up, that maybe they can't do away with that, that they have to regulate it.
I understand they have to regulate the number of cars in there, obviously. Yeah. Good morning, online with our guest.
Until the state lowered the cost to get into the park, used to be a good deal for the senior citizens. But, you know, as they lowered the cost, they also opened up the floodgates. And, you know, you see a lot of people there that you never saw before. We never had trouble with dirtiness and not picking up behind yourself. And you can see the way they do things. We have been there when they walk the dogs on the beach. And if you say something, they say, oh, they have a big mouth. Well, all you have to do is look at the signs. We don't make the rules. The state's supposed to have the law. And we have told the people at the beginning of the park where you come in, maybe it would be a good idea to have a sign where you come in. It lets all people know no alcohol, no glass, no animals on the beach. But people walk in there and they act like they don't know. Well, maybe it's time the state changed a few things again and let people know what the deal is before the whole state park goes to pot. People say it isn't so bad in Holland, they should go there. What it used to be is not as good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, got another call here. Good morning, you're online with our guest.
Well, good morning, Duke. Thank you for taking my call. I'm afraid what's going to happen as far as the state park goes, there's just going to be some sort of general complaint about, oh, we don't have enough money because we're just pulling in our purse strings as tight as we can, and we need increases in this wage and that fare and that entrance fee, things of that nature. But people need to know that, for instance, at Saugatuck Dunes State Park, they spend approximately $100,000 a year on burning trees that they call an invasive species. So whether it is or not, I don't know if it makes a big difference to anyone. I'm not convinced of that. And they spend $100,000 a year doing that. And yet, as the callers have expressed concern, there's actively used parks that are undermanned as a result of a supposed claim of not having enough money. And maybe if they would spend their money a little wiser, it would go a little further on quit burning trees and
okay.
of that nature. There's things that can be done, but they need a little bit of wisdom, and they need to quit pinching taxpayers.
Okay, thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Let me just respond because you know, I don't disagree with some of what the caller was commenting on. I did talk to the director of the DNR and the person who's in charge of all the parks last week about some of the situation. Sometimes your perception of where money is spent wisely is, you know, and some of the criticisms, until you get the full answer, you maybe don't know everything. I criticized the department last week because we witnessed, when my family was camping out there, my in-laws, we witnessed four people standing around laying a piece of concrete that was about 12 feet long and a 1 foot wide,
mm-hmm.
and it took them a day to do it. And then the next day they would come back and they would do another one. And I criticized that, and rightly so. I mean, it was the appearance that people were really wasting their time, and there was a private contractor could have done it in a fraction of the time. What I found out was the people that were doing it were a school teacher and some kids out of the local school that were learning a trade and really needed something to do during the summer.
Yeah.
So it wasn't costing us what we thought it what I thought it was if state employees or a private contractor was doing it. It was really a teaching tool. So I just say that, tell that story because I had to eat crow. And because I didn't know the other side of the story.
Right.
And sometimes when you see things happening, the way things are, money's being spent or you perceive they're being spent, you maybe don't have all the story.
Good morning. You're on the line with Joe.
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment about the state parks. generally, I choose to stay at a private campground, and they're just a few bucks more, and you get full hookup, cable TV, and everything, swimming pools. And all of the state parks seem to be full for $27, and they act like they have no money. I think there ought to be an auditing or something, because it just doesn't seem right. Private campgrounds have to pay income tax, real estate tax, why they can survive just charging a few bucks more than the state parks. I'll listen.
Okay, thank you.
I will make a comment on the financial side and whether they don't believe they have enough money. It was probably three years ago or so that we went to that system of getting rid of the sticker on your windshield, and if you wanted to do it, you paid for it on your license tab. The state parks do have enough money. What they also have is deferred maintenance, and the director told me this just last week, is that they are catching up. Now, just because Holland may not be improving something or Grand Haven may not be improving something, that money is being spent somewhere. And we really had that throughout the budgets in Michigan, where we didn't have any money, and the money we had wasn't spent well, and we let a lot of things go. It's kind of like letting your house, you know, you're 20 years into a 15-year roof on your house, and the paint is peeling, and you just didn't take care of things. Well, we didn't take care of things very well in the past 10 years, and now we've got to catch up. So I'm being assured that the money is being spent on the parks, and as you see those improvements, you know, make my office aware of where you think an improvement is needed in the physical improvements, and I'll pass them on to the department. That doesn't mean it's going to happen next month, but it'll be added to a list, and eventually you're going to see the condition of those parks improve.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I know the park is used heavily.
Holland and Grand Haven are the number one and two parks used in the state.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. And we're out of time, Joel. Thank you so much for being here today.
Sure.